Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Carlos Colazo, Ben Badler, the Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. Welcome to the Hot Sheet. We're glad you're here. Subscribe to the YouTube channel to make sure that you get to see this every week. And today we are finally, I will say, as a group who covers the draft pretty much year round, we are finally less than 2 weeks away from the MLB draft. It is getting here. It is nearing here. We just wrapped up the MLB draft combine. The draft is coming up, All-Star Weekend, not that far away now, finally. But Carlos, just kind of lay out for us, like, there are some changes this year. If you are a more casual draft fan, for one, you know, it'll be light outside when the picks are being made, as opposed to what has been true in other years. But just kind of lay out, like, there are a little bit of a few little differences this year, aren't there?
Yeah, for all the team employees who are just used to a nocturnal schedule and working, the draft is certainly nocturnal the past few years. But we're starting at 1 p.m., 1:30, I think, is when the draft will actually take place Eastern time on Saturday this year. It's a two-day draft like it was a year ago. But it is going to be odd when the draft is finished and we'll actually be able to get food at a decent hour and hopefully be a little bit more lucid and sharp for our post day one coverage. So hopefully from a coverage perspective, that is a benefit, but it's an unusual time this year compared to previous drafts. I'm very excited to see what's going to happen. Like you said, we've been covering this draft class for multiple years now. It feels like with the mid-July draft date that everyone is just always champing at the bit to get this thing rolling, see who actually goes where. We have a mock draft earlier this week that's kind of giving you our current projection and picture of the first round. And then I also had a piece today just kind of going over some of the draft buzz we're hearing as we start to approach draft day. This is the time when a lot of rumors start to come out. Players get a bunch of buzz, whether that's because of combine performances, whether that's because teams are flipping on the models and players really look good once teams are able to put the full picture together. Even sometimes interviews in person at the combine can really boost a player's stock. So all of that's kind of coming in now. And we're excited to get you guys ready for draft day here at Baseball America.
I'm already seeing questions and comments coming in. We love those. Leave those on our YouTube channel, and we will get to those later in the show. But Ben, like, I mean, there's a lot of hay in the barn at this point. Like, obviously, the high school seasons are done. The college seasons are done. But there are still a lot of things going on, including some high school players going to, like, the draft league and things like this. How much do you think is at this point, how much of it is done and it's just a matter of lining up signability and all? And how much of it do you think is that there still are these deep discussions of who do you actually want to take?
Yeah, I think most of it is done at this point. There's probably still some players who are going to be doing private workouts for clubs, but a lot of those private workouts have already gone on at this point. Like you said, there are some players playing in, whether it's the draft league, the Appalachian League, other high school players playing in some summer collegiate leagues and some draft eligible college guys who are playing in college leagues right now too. So teams are still keeping tabs on those guys. They're also just realistically looking ahead to next year, right? Like, there's a lot of teams that are just outgoing and there are a lot of scouts who are out scouting players for 2027 for the high school players or in the Cape or with watching Team USA right now with the collegiate national team. So I think a lot of for this class is already baked in at this point, and it's a lot about lining up teams, lining up their boards, negotiating with agents, trying to really already negotiate deals or see where players are at in terms of their signability.
So Carlos, like you said, mock draft 5.0 is out. Rock Chalowski once again is our number one player in that draft. Rock Chalowski, the White Sox. But the key thing there that you make a point of is that this was the closest you came to changing that. Could you kind of explain that a little bit further? Like, what was the kind of, what are you hearing and kind of how close was the decision of who you were going to say you expect them to go at one?
Yeah, I guess my conversations with people when talking about or trying to figure out what's going to happen up top at one, Grady Emerson's name was just more in the mix than in previous conversations. Most people that I've talked to expect it to be one of Rock Chalowski or Grady Emerson. Ultimately, the reason I didn't put Grady Emerson's name there is like I mentioned in the write-up, I don't want to force a player there just to shake things up. If I think that Rock is more likely to be the pick, he's going to be the player that I put there. And at the end of the day, that's just kind of where I got back to. I attempted to put some draft percentages on here just to indicate maybe even not the likelihood of those players, because I do think it's impossible to put accurate percentages on who's most likely to go where. But I almost thought of it as like, okay, how surprised would I be if this player was taken? And so for me, I think it's more likely than not that Rock Chalowski is the number one pick. I think the most likely second option, not named Rock Chalowski, is Grady Emerson. I think Von Lackey is in play here. I also feel like Von Lackey is less in play in this iteration of the mock than I did maybe in our previous iteration. I've just heard so much Rock and Grady at the top. And I also put a 1% Jacob Lombard / the field, because I do think putting 100% odds on three players is probably more confidence than I want to indicate in a mock draft purpose. But that's kind of why Rock is still here. I think he's the best player in the class. I think his tool set and skill and performance warrant him being the first overall pick. I do expect him to be the first overall pick as we stand today.
But with Grady Emerson, as you know, like you said, you're hearing his name more. The other part of this is we had a, if you enjoyed this, you should check out a YouTube channel, also at baseballamerica.com. We had the kind of the case for number one, looking at all three of these players. And one of the things that does stand out with that is teams are, and you know, the research backs up, there's a reason for teams to be very enticed by the high school shortstop demographic, right? And Grady Emerson's bat, kind of, it does make it an interesting argument, does it not?
Yeah, it makes a tremendously captivating argument. I think we all here believe that Grady Emerson is the best pure hitter in this class. If you believe that to be the case, if you think Grady Emerson is a potential 70 grade hitter, if you think he's the sort of prospect who could become a JJ Weatherholt or Kevin McGonigal sort of hitter, I think the decision to take Grady Emerson would make a ton of sense. I do think there is this disconnect in viewing Grady Emerson versus Rock Chalowski that I want to push back on a little bit. I hear a lot about maybe Grady Emerson having the sort of tool set and upside of a Bobby Witt Jr. Or Connor Griffin. I think sometimes we can simplify the draft to say, oh, college player equals higher floor, safer player, high school player equals higher ceiling, bigger tool set. I actually think Rock Chalowski's tool set is even more exciting than Grady Emerson. And that's part of the reason why he's been the wire-to-wire number one prospect in the class right now. I think if you're making a case for Grady Emerson, I think it is primarily centered on his pure hitting ability and the fact that his secondary tool set, while not elite, is still rock solid. You still feel confident about getting a competent MLB shortstop who can play the position at a solid level. I don't think he's the same defender that Rock Chalowski was at the same time or is today. I think you have to project more on getting to the sort of power that you could get with a Rock Chalowski or a Von Lackey today. Maybe speed is the element you could say Grady Emerson does have over Rock Chalowski. I think that's going to be more part of his game than either of the other two college players who seem to be in consideration for this pick. But you're coming back to the hit tool and the confidence you have in the hit tool if you want to take Grady first.
As we said, also, the MLB Draft Combine just wrapped up out in Phoenix, Arizona. We had several people out there. But Ben, I feel like that is the Combine has become kind of like the high school players event in a lot of ways. There are some college players participate, but you're not going to see Rock Chalowski taking swings out there or Von Lackey or anything like that. But we did see guys like Rocco Maniscalco, Jack Beck, Dominic Santarelli, Taj Marchand. Like, we did see some of the high school players really kind of stand out there. This is kind of the part that you focus on for us. You've seen these guys for years. Rocco in particular seemed like someone who really kind of does, you know, kind of jumped out. What is it like on some of those players that teams are seeing now, or that, you know, we've kind of seen kind of developing as we head towards the draft?
I think for the high school players, you're looking at you're trying to get a lot of the measurable stuff from the combine that you're not getting when you're going to, you know, just an ordinary high school game, right? And teams are doing private workouts with a lot of these players, so they're getting the information that they're wanting to get in those environments too. But you're getting a lot of that, you know, whether it's exit velocity data or pitch measurements that you're looking for as a club, more so than like, okay, what does his swing look like? How does he feel at ground balls? Like, yeah, Aiden Ruiz took a great infield. Okay, fine. Like, we're not getting any new information from that. Whereas a lot of the measurable stuff, you're getting, and you're probably getting a lot more updated measurables on those guys compared to maybe the last time you took a lot of those measurements might have been last summer or last fall.
I say that Ben is one who does a good job of making sure that we update our heights and weights all through, because it is notable, especially with his high school kids. It's like, oh, that guy's two inches taller than he was the last time we entered this. This guy's 10, 15 pounds. It does change. But Carlos, the other thing I did want to hit on the combine is, for everything going on the field, is the most important part of it kind of the interviews and all that are often going on at the same time off the field with teams?
I think that definitely can be the case. Teams really want to feel confident that the makeup and the personality of the players they're drafting and spending a lot of money on, they feel comfortable about how the player is going to handle transitioning from either a college baseball environment or a high school environment to pro ball, because I think it is a pretty significant shift in just lifestyle, and knowing that the player is going to be able to handle that mentally, I think is really important. Getting a better understanding of what the player expects to happen in player development, how they view their own game, how adaptable they are, how willing or unwilling they might be to receive coaching. All of that is going to be super useful when teams try to figure out what their player development plan is going to be for a player. Even if it's not to say, hey, are we in or are we out on this player's personality? I think just in terms of like figuring out how you're going to work with this player and coach this player, teams should have already done a lot of work figuring out this stuff with their area scouts, doing a lot of the groundwork at this level going back to last winter. That's when a lot of that starts in earnest for these players in this class, the in-home visits. But I do think having some of your higher up decision makers getting into a room and talk to the players is massively useful. And we hear every year there are players who maybe inch their draft stock up or maybe inch their draft stock down based on how they handle those interviews.
So speaking of guys moving up, we're going to talk about a certain college lefty who's definitely rising up boards. We're talking about draft intel that we're hearing right after this break.
People, dehydration sucks. Quince electrolyte stick packs to the rescue. I order them. I use them all of the time.
Listen, as somebody who may or may not have had some adult beverages in their life, the next day, you know what flavor I like? Watermelon. And I don't like watermelon, I'll go raspberry, and it helps me to get my citrus salt in. But if I do, it helps me to get back to normal, feeling good and ready to go the next day.
Yep, tough workout or dry mouth in the morning, whatever it is, this is going to help you out. Quince always has the best deals for you. You can go on their website and see a number of products. We're talking about not only a product that tastes great, but has zero sugar options that are also stevia free. Give your body what it really needs to stay hydrated. Go to quince.com/foul for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/foul for free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/foul. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And we're back. Helium Spot, guys who are rising up draft boards. This is one of the things that is the subject of the draft intel piece Carlos has today. We've been talking all year, all spring, I feel like, about who is the number two pitching prospect on the college side in this year's draft class. Carlos, is that kind of changing? Is this kind of they're solidifying maybe a different name than was the case earlier this year?
Yeah, I don't know about for number two. It does seem like both Liam Peterson and Cameron Flukie have a lot of preseason gravity that's holding them in the middle of the first round, despite dealing with some injuries in Flukie's case that limited his time and then continued control questions with Liam Peterson. I think there is just a comfort level with the pure talent you're getting from those pitchers and the lack of someone else in the second tier taking a step forward. But a player who did move up higher in the mock draft than I was anticipating and could even go higher than where we had him projected at 23 to the Cubs is Mason Edwards, Baseball America's College Pitcher of the Year after an excellent season. I think teams just seem to feel like they have a lot of comfort with this profile as they're going over his year, stacking him up with the rest of the players that you might be picking from if you want to go to this college pitching demographic. He does not have the typical electricity or fastball velocity that you've come to expect from first-round college arms. But beyond that, he led the country in strikeouts. He's left-handed. For all we know, he has a pretty clean medical. There are no glaring concerns there. His secondaries are dynamite. His curveball was a tremendously effective pitch this spring, a 60% miss rate with that. The changeup looks like another reliable offering. And while the fastball isn't the hardest pitch in the class, it does play up because of the above average riding life he's able to get on it. And I think when you look at Mason Edwards and you look at the amount of innings he logged and how dominant he was, if you look at either strikeout rate, strikeout minus walk rate, ERA, he's top of the college pitching group wherever you look in most of those categories. And I think there's just a comfort that teams feel with that profile if they think they can either help him add more fastball velocity in pro ball, or if they think that his fastball has the movement characteristics to still be effective without a jump in velocity. I think he just checks a lot of boxes, and teams are looking for college pitchers that they feel comfortable after guys like Jackson Flora, Cameron Flukie, Liam Peterson come off the board. If he goes in the 10 to 20 range, don't be surprised. I even think as a potential option inside the top 10, if things get crazy, that wouldn't be shocking at this point.
Especially again, when we see something like that, also know that sometimes the number that player ends up signing for may be a little different, save a little bit money to spend elsewhere. But also there were some prep prospects, some high school prospects that you're hearing up arrows on as well. Who's kind of standing out and who are you kind of hearing about with that?
Yeah, there are some consistent buzzy names that we're hearing a lot of, maybe after the first round. There are always a few names who start to get a lot of helium. Dax Kilby was a name who fit into this category a year ago. Maybe the biggest name is Trey Ebel, who is a shortstop out of California. He was part of that loaded Corona High team a year ago. He's the younger brother of Brady Ebel. And you guys were talking about how players can change physically very quickly in high school. Well, Trey is a player who added a lot of strength. He added some physicality this spring. And I think teams are more excited about the potential pop that he's going to bring to the table offensively. Now, he's not the most toolsy player in the world. He's not the twitchiest player in the world. But I think for a lot of the same reasons why teams liked his brother a year ago, just a very polished, high IQ, feel for the game, pure hitting ability, probably a player who's going to run out at shortstop, at least to start his career. And I've talked with more scouts who view him as an above average or better defender at third base or second base in the long term. Add on to all of that, he's going to be 17.7 at the draft. I think there are a couple model teams who are very high on him. I would expect him at this stage to go somewhere in the second round. And again, if he went into the comp late first, that shouldn't be shocking either, just given the buzz we're hearing around his name.
This has become not unusual. We're actually well prepped for this year, because last year around this time, we saw the Nationals make a move. They basically Mike Rizzo was out. They brought in an interim GM to take over right before the draft, in a draft that they were picking 1-1. The Angels aren't picking 1-1, but the Angels is obviously a very important draft for the Angels. The Angels are picking high, as they have in many years. Ben, I kind of feel like that the Perry Manasian firing, bringing in John Mozeliak in an interim role, is going to affect it slightly. But my sense is I don't feel like we saw this last year. You have this entire infrastructure below that to kind of ensure that when these decisions are made, you still are, you're pretty well prepped, even with a change at the top. But what do you think?
I think the Angels are just different. I mean, does John Mozeliak, as a consultant, do you come in and do you tell the owner what the number one problem is in the organization, which is the owner? I mean, I don't think the Angels previously were just drafting college players, because Perry Manasian was saying, oh, we've got to draft only college guys. Like, we got to get these guys and we got to rush them up as fast to the big leagues as possible, because that's the best thing for the long-term health of our organization. I think that's coming probably from ownership, and the owner is still there. Now, maybe this is a signal that, okay, he's having a change of heart or a change of how he wants to run the organization, but maybe they go with the high school route. Not that necessarily taking a high school player is going to be the best player on the board, but I think it would be much more beneficial for the Angels to open themselves up to players from both college and high school, and not just entirely eliminate one segment of players with, you know, your first round pick.
Yeah, it's something where we probably won't change the philosophy. As you said, we've seen year after year the Angels draft someone who can move quickly, in some cases too quickly. Nolan Shanuel to his credit, has held his own ever since he arrived as their first round pick. It was the fastest moving first round pick in years. But at the same time, the flaws that he had when he reached the majors are still the flaws now. And he's going to be getting expensive soon. And it's like, okay, is that a better development path? Probably don't think so, but that is the Angels' way. We have a lot of questions. We have a ton of good questions. We will be getting to those. We're going to answer as many of those as we can. So we're going to leave a little extra time for that right after this break.
Hey, SeatGeek is MLB's official ticket marketplace. And in addition to finding every single game on the MLB calendar, there are big events coming up very soon.
There's an all-star game. There's a home run derby. And if you think you're perfect and you can pick the right seat at the home run derby to get the most home run balls, you can get the little green dot, and that might be your lucky seat. Don't go red dot, though, because you might not get any balls. But go red, green dot, and get as many home run balls as you think you can catch.
Yep. You click the seat. You check out what your view is. Each ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. And that's what AJ's talking about. Green good, red bad, with those dots. And the code for you, territory10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with promo code territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description of this episode. That'll help you download the app and get the code automatically added to your account so that you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
We are back, and we've got a lot of great viewer questions today, so we're going to dive right into them. I love this one, because this is one where, yes, if you've been following this, you know that Carlos is a big believer in Derek Curiel. I'm going to love to kind of team Ben up first. I think Carlos has done enough draft podcasts with me to kind of know where I'm probably headed. But Ben, so the question is, we know Carlos may be higher on Curiel than much of the industry. Do JJ and Ben have someone in the first round mix that they do like more than the consensus? Is there someone in that first round range that you're like, I'm a big believer that this guy's going to end up being maybe a little bit better than a lot may appreciate?
He'll give you a college guy and a high school player. On the college side, I would say AJ Gracia, outfielder at Virginia. Just a really strong track record of hitting ever since he was a freshman. Really good swing decisions, left-handed hitter, high contact guy, track record of hitting for power. I think it's a corner outfield profile, but I think he's going to move along the lines of like a Carson Benj, right? And there's some two-way history there as well. I think he's going to get off to a really strong start as soon as he gets to the minor leagues, move quickly and be a really strong pick for whoever takes him. I wouldn't even be shocked if somebody jumped up and took him within the top 10 picks. And the other guy on the high school side who I think is a huge X factor in this draft is Tyler Spangler. High school shortstop, did not play at all this season. And I think just on talent, look, like Carlos said, Grady Emerson, we've had as the number one high school player in the country, ever since he was a sophomore in high school, and haven't moved off that. But then I think after that, you could probably say Jacob Lombard, but Tyler Spangler is right there. I mean, 6'3", left-handed hitting shortstop, really smooth swing, good actions at shortstop, high contact guy, really projectable power potential as well. Stanford commit complicates things as well. Usually that's Stanford commits go to Stanford, but usually Stanford is not committing or getting commitments from players who are as talented as Tyler Spangler. So I really like Tyler Spangler. I also really have no idea what's going to happen with him in the draft.
I'll give two also, but I'll try to be quick with it. Drew Burris is the one that I think everyone who's been listening to our draft pod knows, that like the Georgia Tech outfielder. He just has a very long track record of hitting. Not the best year this year. The home run splits this year are a little bit worrisome, but I just think he's a very pure hitter. We've seen this already multiple years of college at Georgia Tech. Then on the pitching side, I'm going to go with Taylor Rabe, the Ole Miss right-hander who really, I feel like, showed at the end of the year. I think that he would not surprise me if he goes really a little bit higher than even our rankings have him in when we update our rankings, because there's just a lot of up arrow here, a lot of helium from the standpoint of just how he's performed. He's another fascinating one, but we don't want to just give you first-round guys. The next question tees us up for an even better one, which is, who are some of your personal cheese balls? Great BA podcast reference, John Manuel invention, many, many years ago. Personal cheese ball, a guy that you like more than most from someone outside of the top 30. Carlos, you were left out of that last one, so we'll let you go first here. Someone that you think outside of the top 30 is maybe a little bit underappreciated.
Yeah, I'll go with Texas shortstop, maybe outfielder in the future, Connor Como. He is a tall, projectable, left-handed hitter who just has great hitting instincts, feel for the barrel, and there's so much space on his frame to dream on the power that could be coming in the future. I just buy into the pure hitting ability from him. So he's a pure hitter, I think, has a chance to sneak into a pretty good range on draft day, but he's not a consensus guy. So I just really like the hitting ingredients in the frame with him. So Como would be my guy to point to.
What about you, Ben?
I like Trey Rangel, right-handed pitcher, high school pitcher out of Texas, extremely fast arm. He's been up to 98 miles an hour, outstanding ability to spin a breaking ball upwards of 3,000 and really upwards of 3,200 RPM. If I was had a pick in, you know, the second round, I'd love to get Trey Rangel. I also would not be surprised if he ends up kind of following that Tegan Coons path, ends up getting to college, ends up going to University of Texas, working with a great pitching development program there, and ends up turning himself into, you know, a first round pick in a couple years.
A lot of commenters saying Jared Avicula. That's, again, I'm not going to go Georgia Tech twice here, but he's a good one to kind of highlight. But I'm going to go with Owen Hull, the North Carolina center fielder. We saw in Omaha just kind of how impactful he can be. The only real knock on him right now is the power. I think that will come, but you see hitting ability, you see defense, you see an impact as far as athleticism. Just a very well-rounded player, and one that, you know, if he goes in the second round, I think someone could get a nice little a nice steal there. I actually kind of like his profile, maybe a little bit better than it's North Carolina's kind of center field U, but maybe like his a little bit better than some of the other center fielders come out in recent years out of North Carolina. I wish we had more time to get to more questions here, but we do want to highlight also, though, that if you check out baseballamerica.com, July 1st, we are rolling out updated top 100 and top 30s for all 30 teams. So do check that out. Yes, the draft's going on, but we're also making sure you are up to date on all the players on the prospect side as well. So much over at baseballamerica.com. We do thank you for all the comments, all the viewers, and please do like and subscribe. Click that bell so you know that every time we're going live on the Hot Sheet Show. For Ben and Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.